If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. E-listening on Wednesday, we have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the one divine beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christ. This evening, our seminar topic is The True Purpose of Life is Living God Conscious and Connected. So if you're ready to move deeper into God consciousness and that sense of being connected to the all that is, take a deep breath and consciously intend your connection and in filling with the divine presence. And you may feel that coming right down over your head, almost as if someone were running their fingers through your hair. Your crown chakra may be tingling as that energy connects and flows down through your body. Let's do that again. It's all in your intention. Take a deep breath and connect with that divine presence. And see it filling you, the top of your head, all the way through your whole body. And when that connection occurs, notice what happens. I immediately start rocking back and forth when that connection happens for me. That's different for each person. But practice that conscious connecting through your breath and your intention. And observe how spirit aligns with you personally. Make that your business, to become aware of how the presence of God infuses you, inhabits you, and lives through you as a conscious conduit of divinity in this world. Living in a world that is largely unconscious constitutes our spiritual practice by staying awake, connected, and living a life that is divinely ordered, not taking happenstance, not taking what's present, but allowing the divinity within you to absolutely change the environment and the atmosphere, wherever you are, where you import that higher dimensional overlay, so that wherever you are, you make that holy ground because you're present. And you're present, in that presence, changes the atmosphere. It affects the people that are around you. You become a conduit through which that golden age, that Satya Yuga, can actualize upon the earth. So let's be aware of anything that needs to be cleared now. Always take responsibility for your state of consciousness. And a good thing to do is to ask for the clearance through the divine light of anything that you may be carrying energetically in your mind, in your heart, in your chakras, in your auric field, in the atmosphere in which you find yourself. Ask for the clearance of anything that does not serve your highest good. And take a deep breath and just release it back into the nothingness from which it only seemed to appear. The truth is, there is not a single iota of evil throughout the cosmos, according to Sai Baba. So what becomes evil is simply the mind which has taken on maya, wrong thinking, wrong associations, and thus it projects a world of evil where none exists. And so we but battle phantoms, truly speaking. But nevertheless, since we believe the world is real, we have to act out of the state of consciousness with which we have projected our reality. So let's look a little bit tonight about why we're here as human beings and what the purpose of it all is, and the two kinds of people that we encounter every day in this world of very different natures. Let's discern carefully our own divine nature. But let me ask you, as you go about your daily activities, how God-conscious and connected are you? Do you stay God-connected? That is to say, centered and aware, mindful, all the time, some of the time, most of the time, or only once in a while? Do you notice when you go unconscious? Are you aware when you go unconscious? And what do you do when you find yourself acting from that ego which is unconscious? So you know that ego is basically the mind. The mind simply consists of desires. Once the desires are removed, like removing the threads of a cloth, the cloth is no more. It disappears, it vanishes, it collapses. And since desires bind us to this phenomenal world, what we are doing is taking desires for the things of the material world and gradually weaning them onto desire for greater awareness, greater devotion, greater love, God consciousness. So that, as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that he is the author of good desire. So we take the materialistic desires which have bound us to this phenomenal world, and we begin to attach them to things that relate us to God. In that way, then they serve us as a catalyst for our greater inquiry into the self. Gradually, we redirect our desires in our mind and all of the impulses of our nature Godward. And thus, desires and thoughts gradually dissolve into higher awareness. Thinking is really unnecessary. There's nothing to think about. There's nothing going on here that you need to figure out or understand. Now, I'm not talking about driving your car and thinking about what you have to buy when you go shopping, you know, things like that. I'm talking about the idle thoughts that occupy so much of our time and energy that mean nothing. They disrupt the mind and rob us of present peace and present bliss. God is 100% present. So to be in God consciousness, you have to be 100% here and now. And so the mind itself distracts us from here and now. Thinking, which is never here and now, it's always involving the past or the present, the future. And so it doesn't serve us to just allow our mind to wool gather and generate thoughts that don't mean anything and deprive us of present bliss, present peace, and that present joy of just living life without agenda. So thinking involves time, and thus, again, is never present here and now. But when the mind and thinking dissolve in awareness, everything you need to know appears as it's needed. It's instant. It simply is present when the mind is clear of unnecessary thinking. So, awareness is truly omniscience. Awareness is God consciousness. Awareness is divine knowing, beyond thinking and beyond the ego mind. So we can contemplate that somewhat, because as we mull these things and ponder them, which is a form of contemplation, they begin to settle deep within us and form a foundation for our life that is based on spiritual principle. You need that foundation, that floor, where you can stand solidly and begin to integrate the truth of your being. So to think of God is contemplation. To remember God is connection. To associate God with one's daily activities is yoga. And when God is experienced in all, as all, always, that is God consciousness. So truly speaking, there is one primary purpose for having attained a human birth. And our primary purpose as human beings is to awaken and realize our divine nature. To know, love, and serve God, bottom line. That's the purpose for a human birth. We are each an incarnation of divinity. Although most people are completely unaware of that fact, it's just not a part of our Western culture. We're not taught this anywhere. But consider this. It has taken, according to some, 300,000 lifetimes to have finally gotten a human birth. That's an awful lot of experience we've had in all kinds of forms before we got this form. And the human birth is the only form that we can consciously know God. We can consciously become self-aware, and we can consciously return our awareness to full God realization. No other form allows us that. Now, since we have this incredible experience of having a human form, shouldn't we utilize this great opportunity for its intended purpose? I think so. I think that we need to really ponder these things and consider how fortunate we are to be here, to even have access to this type of programming. Many countries, they don't allow you to listen to things like this. So we're so very blessed. So we're here to make conscious contact with our immortal divine self. Simplest way to do that, which I share in every single seminar, is to take a deep breath with the intention to connect with your divinity. Let's do that right now. Take a deep breath. And again, connect. I just invite that connection into your mind, into your life, into your heart, into every place that you find yourself. because that breath is God. It's the spirit. It's the whole spirit of God that makes you a whole light being. So life after life, we have passed through every type of form and had every imaginable experience to bring us here to this moment and to this seminar. We are listening to this information because we are finally ready to fully awaken and actualize our divine nature and potential. Now, not everyone who appears in human form is really human. In fact, there are two predominant types appearing as humans, but differing entirely in consciousness. In Sanskrit, those two types of people appearing in human bodily forms are called manavas and danavas. The manava is the true human being and is characterized by love. The manavas alone are true human beings, for they alone express goodness, empathy, and compassion. The other type is the danava, characterized by a lack of love. The danava cannot express empathy and compassion. They are merciless. They are subhuman, not yet fully human. They're more still in the animal kingdom, or they could even be demonic. So the manavas and the danavas reveal by their behavior who and what they are. True human beings, the manavas, engage themselves in loving, caring acts of kindness and goodwill. They live lives of rightness, goodness, gentleness, and truth. They seek to serve and benefit others and contribute in some way to the betterment of life, again, for the benefit of others. Their nature is selfless, goodness. And that selfless goodness is revealed in their face. You'll notice they have a radiance about them. Their faces are soft and kind, and you can read goodness. And in advanced states, you can see the bliss of God come up in their countenance. The danavas, however, have kind of a darkened countenance that's it has a gray tone to it. It's devoid of love. There's no light under the skin. And they're very selfish and self-promoting, having no respect nor regard for others, nor any inclination to benefit anyone but themselves. Danavas are subhuman, not fully human. And so their nature and inclination is dark. They delight in causing others to suffer and are vain, arrogant, proud, and domineering by nature. In the world, danavas abound in plenty. You can see them everywhere. And with them, the manavas have nothing in common in this world. So what to do? Well, like attracts like. So seek your own kind and your own company and leave the danavas to theirs. There's no point in engaging in conflict because there's no hope of resolution with those kinds of people. What you can do is create your own reality so strongly that you just seem to live in your own orbit. And you don't find yourself connecting with danavas very often. In fact, I haven't connected with one for so many years I've actually forgotten what they look like. You just live in a different dimension, a different paradigm, and you don't attract into your field those encounters after a while. But if you do, don't polarize. Because if you develop a polarizing energy towards that, that feeds them, that nurtures them, that allows them to continue doing what they do, which is wreaking havoc, causing problems, hurting people. The best thing you can do is be totally neutral. And if you're really advanced, see them as the holy sons of God, that they truly are, underneath that distorted mind. They are the pure Atma, beloved of God. But they're not connected, you see. To be connected to God, you have to have love, because God is love. So the ego cannot connect with God. That's the biggest, single most block to our ongoing bliss, is letting the mind run the show instead of consciously connecting with God and God's love. So our world has become so materialistic that it's almost as if science and the mind have become the gods of this time. Even amongst the religious people, you don't find a real love of God in most cases. You'll find people reading out of a book things that happened thousands of years ago and walking out without any transformation, doing the same thing Sunday after Sunday or Saturday after Saturday or Friday after Friday, whatever your religion is. But it's all external. There's no internal transformation. For internal transformation, you have to have an intention to making that connection for yourself, not getting it secondhand through somebody who's reading a book and has never had that connection themselves. How can they awaken it in you if they haven't awakened it in themselves? So everything has become mind, it's become science, it's become material. And that's why each week we very much try to share keys to activate your own ongoing spiritual inquiry, that you can find how to dig deep within the treasure trove of your own overflowing, unlimited bliss and live a life that's totally transcendental to this world. You're in the world. You operate effectively in the world. You do your duties, whatever it is that you're to do. But you're detached. You're detached from outcome. You're detached from what people think and say and do. And you just move through life, blessing and loving and releasing. And basically knowing that it all serves a higher purpose. Even if that doesn't seem to be the case at all in many instances, everything ultimately serves that higher purpose. So really speaking, it's the nature of the mind that determines one's character. And since both Manavas and Danavas were created by God and are God, underneath all of those externally appropriated mindsets and behaviors, they both have the potential to realize immortality, fundamentally speaking. However, only the Manavas will attain immortality, for only love is immortal. So that's why evil never triumphs, because it's not an eternal principle. It has no foundation. It's like a shadow that appears that has no substance. But love is God and eternal. So only God-like qualities are immortal and unite us with God. Thus, good always triumphs over evil, just as darkness vanishes in the light. So it's through wrong thoughts, bad habits, and bad associations that warp the mind and distort the humanness of a person. We become like the thoughts that we harbor, the habits we allow to control us, and the company we keep. And these form, where they're very, very strong and predominant, qualities and inclinations that follow us incarnation after incarnation, which is why it's so important to develop the kind of qualities that you want to take with you into the next lifetime. These are called samskaras in Sanskrit. And generally, we have only about four major samskaras that pretty much direct our lives. So examine your nature and see if you can detect three or four major qualities that predominate in your approach to life. Those would be your samskaras. To have a desire for God is a very, very good samskara to have. And it's the result of lifetimes of spiritual inquiry and seeking. So you have good samskaras as well as bad. Take, for example, your childhood. Probably you can only remember a few very, very good experiences and a few very, very negative experiences that you had as a child. You don't remember everything. How much more difficult is it to remember when you have a new body and a new brain that your soul has to impress? And the soul would be you. You have to impress that new brain. So what shows up probably about as early as 2 or 3 years old are samskaras. You begin to see the nature of the child. In fact, sometimes even the mother can discern the samskaras and the nature of the child when she's carrying it, those 9 months. It'll direct, for example, of certain foods that she may crave. Those are the samskaras of that consciousness that she's carrying in her womb. And also the reason why certain religions don't want you to have blood transfusions. Because the blood carries the whole karmic imprint of that soul, not just in this lifetime, but in all the previous lifetimes. It's contained in the blood. So I'm not saying to have or not to have transfusions. I'm just saying that the blood carries your whole history and is unique to you. So we become like the thoughts we habitually host. Whatever it is we focus on, we become that. And the company we keep greatly affects our character and our thoughts and our behavior. Oh, how carefully we need to select the people that we spend time with. No wonder mystics prefer their own company. Because a really enlightened person is not going to hang out, if you know what I mean. They're not going to hang out and do mindless chatter. They prefer the presence in which they can be quietly with the beloved. They're the type of person that can walk in heaven, in their mind, and be in a crowd. And they can be completely alone in that crowd. It doesn't touch them or affect them. Nor do does it repulse them, but neither does it attract or influence them. So it's worth everything to build your own portable paradise within yourself, within your aura that extends from yourself, and live there. Make that your home. Make that the place you hang out. But not just idle, time-wasting associations. So even if the Donovas are temporarily appearing to be nice and accommodating, watch how quickly they revert to their unloving, spiteful, merciless nature, because they're completely unable to express love, and thus they're completely unable to make contact with the divine. Even if they would want to, which they don't, they have no interest in spirituality or the spiritual things. So only hearts filled with the nectar of love indicate genuine humanity in a person. True love, or prema, is continuous. It doesn't ebb and flow. Well, it doesn't have any point in which it's absent, let's put it that way. True love, or prema, is continuous. It's ever-present, ever-flowing, unsullied by egotism, is unselfish, and unconditional. So any other kind of love is not love at all. If it's conditional, if it's selfish, if it's full of ego. So these qualities immediately indicate divine connection and communion. Whether or not one is actually on a spiritual path. Because spirituality, pure and simple, is simply loving selflessness in action. It's just love. But in action, love is never passive. Although it's not always outwardly expressive in the sense that we would, you know, hugging and kissing and all that sort of thing, a loving person radiates that loving, which is an active process of self-bestowal. They're giving of their self all the time. The nature of love is extension, is love expanding and touching. It doesn't have any withholds. To maintain that ongoing conscious connection, one must realize that is your foremost duty to yourself and all of life. So if you become what you focus upon and think about the most, then it stands to reason that if you want to realize God, your own divine self, which is God, you're going to have to prioritize that in your life. So how do you prioritize God consciousness in your life? Well, first of all, you have to have a hunger for God. You have to want to. You have to have a desire. You know, you get to a certain point in your spiritual evolution, unfoldment, where you're so tired of the world, you become desperate for truth, desperate for reality, desperate to know who you are, desperate for finding a means to somehow shift your consciousness out of the bondage of time-space continuums, out of reincarnation, and all of that. You develop an intense desire for truth, and truth is another name for God. But something shifts in you to where you really realize that the world offers nothing for you. It's nothing in the world that's worth spending your life trying to attain it. and you want something more. So you start with that desire. You know, you can't get a person interested in something if they have no interest in it to begin with. So you can do as the avatar Satya Sai Baba has suggested so simply. You start the day with love. You fill the day with love. You end the day with love. That is the way to God. For example, you start the day with love. Let your very first thought, your very first thing, when you awaken, be an expression of love in some way. For example, I say the name of God the minute I open my eyes. And then I start to be grateful for the things that occur to me in my life in that morning. And I express gratitude and love. And then I spend a few moments just really connecting with God, very silently, heart to heart. And then, I start my spiritual practice for the day. But I have time to do that. Some of you have to get up and get to work. So you have to create time to do that. You have to set your alarm early so that you have some few moments, at least 15 minutes, preferably more, but at least 15, that you spend with God, however that works for you. You start the day with God, with love. And then, after you have prioritized the first minutes of your day to connect with God consciously and deliberately, you can pray or you can have your morning coffee and tea and your God talk, your God chat. Or if you're really serious about God realization, you will study some deep spiritual book like A Course in Miracles or the New Testament or the Bhagavad Gita or something of that nature, and then you meditate. How long? Well, I would say a minimum of 15, 20 minutes. But you find as you really get into it, that it takes its own time. You know, you just begin that habit of God first in the morning. And that sets the tone for your whole day. And then you spend the day with love. You dedicate your daily activities to God, and you fill the day with love by kindness, consideration of others, integrity, helpful service, but always with the awareness that what you're doing is being done for God, not your boss, not your fellow teammates or whatever. You're doing this for God, who is simply appearing in the form of your boss and your fellow co-workers and the people that you're serving, so that you're free of the karma of that action. You're doing it for God. That's your yoga. That's your karma yoga, your yoga of action. And you therefore do your best with your job. You're always going to strive for doing everything with as much impeccability as possible, but without any personal attachment as to the outcome. No personal expectation, no craving for acknowledgement and all that stuff that the ego does. You just do your best and you leave the results to God, and you offer it as your love made manifest. And that's how you spend the day with love. Now you end the day with love, and you approach your evening so that when you retire, you have a clean conscience and a clean heart and a peaceful mind. Whether you're alone or with a partner, let that closing of the day be with God, so that you have the sense that you're releasing everything that happened in the day to the Lord. That's past. And now you're going to merge into the Lord's loving presence. And whatever eventuates from that, eventuates. Sometimes we're sent forward to do service on the other planes of consciousness. Sometimes we just dissolve in the love and peace of a dreamless sleep. So whatever it is for you, let it be a dissolving of the day in the love of God. And some people like to meditate then. I tend to fall asleep immediately, so I don't meditate in the night, but I often do a japa mala, a rosary, in which I chant the names of God. Sometimes I'll read a spiritual book. But always I end the day with a sense that I'm dissolving into the Beloved. So that's a simple way that anyone can practice. These simple three ways develop a conscious awareness of God at those major points of the day, when the day begins, when the day ends, but also throughout the day. And you can use something like A Course in Miracles, which is a very, very good practice. I've done it when I've had jobs where I had a lunch break, and I would go and I would read the Course in Miracles during my lunch break, and I would repeat the day's lesson, you know, as I would go about the day. It gives you an affirmation and a mantra and a way to call yourself forward into your divinity that's very, very good for the Western mind. It's a Western approach to Advaita, you know, non-dual understanding of God. So how to develop God consciousness? One has to be clever in finding ways to be conscious of God all the time. God conscious, God consciousness. Same thing. So Sai Baba gives us these nine forms of devotion that will lead one to full God consciousness through the path of bhakti or devotion. And they are simple and can be practiced in any order, or perhaps you will select one of them, and that will work as well. Or you may practice, as I have, all of them. So you just, I will explain them, and then you can see how you can apply them if you wish. So you can adapt these approaches to whatever religion you belong to or form of spirituality that you practice. And you can readily see that they do apply to every spiritual approach and every spiritual tradition. And the nine forms of devotion are, number one, listening to the stories of God. So when anyone is speaking of godly things, you listen. And that's a path to devotion. You could be listening to seminars from Deepak Chopra or Sai Baba or John Roger or whoever your spiritual leader is or focus. There's many things on YouTube. But the listening to things related to God, the stories of saints, godly men and women, that constitutes what's called in Sanskrit, shravana. Shravana means listening. Number two is singing to or about God, or chanting the names of God. Also, with regard to listening, we can listen to the sound current of God. And we can sing the hue. So that's another way to practice shravana, listening, and kirtanam, which is singing to or about God. That can be bhajan, that can be choral singing, like in a church. That can be singing and toning all by yourself in your room. Singing to and about God is a valid pathway to God consciousness. The third is remembering God. A Course in Miracles, again, is very good to use for this. Or, as Brother Lawrence in his lovely little book, Practicing the Presence of God, you can follow his practice. Or, you can follow the practice of mindfulness. Or, some other means so that God is associated with whatever it is you're doing throughout the day. So you have listening, singing, and remembering God. Remembering God is called Smaranam, or Vishnu Smaranam. The fourth is serving. Serving God by serving others as living embodiments of God. Serving the Guru, that's very much practiced in the East. Also dedicating all of your thoughts, words, and actions to God, as well as the outcome that constitutes serving. And that call is called in Sanskrit Pada Sevanam, serving the feet, basically. And the feet, again, in India, represents the understanding of wisdom. The fifth is reverence, in Sanskrit Vandanam. Sensing the divine presence in nature and all of life. Some of you love nature. You're very much into the green movement and ecology. Begin to associate that with the glory of God. And you're right in there. So this is where you're sensing the divine presence. As you go about, you're looking at the things that are beautiful and praiseworthy. When you're a mystic, that's all you see. You're just so in love with life. Everything just shines with beauty. And that's a form of vandanam, or reverence. And beauty becomes then a path to God. Sensitivity to nature becomes a path to God. Many shamans are in that type of approach to God. So now you have listening, singing, remembering, serving, and reverence. Number six is archanam, or ritual worship. Now this is where we're doing specific rituals that keep you divinely aware and connected throughout the day. For example, when I shower, I always chant the Gayatri Mantra. That way I'm cleaning my body and my soul and inner consciousness at the same time. Another thing. Every time I sit down to eat or drink anything, I bless it. That's another ritual, another example of ritual that you can do. Every time I get in my car, I take charge of that whole trip by putting it under the governance of the Divine Spirit. Let the Divine Spirit order and direct every interchange, everything that happens. And that's another ritual. Those are ways that you can just incorporate the remembrance of God throughout your day. And when you go into a meeting, or you're going to interact with someone, or you're going on an outing, or you're going shopping, or wherever you're going, or you're going to a restaurant, you bring that light forward and ask that that be divinely guided and ordered. So that you're always in a divine flow, a divine association. And then you stay present when you're with people. You really stay present with them. And you see how you can bring light and upliftment into that interaction. And that's called right human relations. And that brings, again, the quality of divinity into your interchanges with people. And that's the way that you spend the day with God. Spend the day with love. So now we have listening, singing, remembering, serving, reverence, and ritual worship. But everything we do is a ritual. You know, when you look at the habits that we have, a habit is always a ritual. And you just associate that, you see, with God, and you've got a valid spiritual path. Number 7 is dasyam, or dedication. And here you become the loving servant of all life. You dedicate yourself as an instrument through which the divine spirit operates. You yield all personal doing to allow the source to source through you. You live as a divine conduit of God's love in this world, of God's mercy, of God's grace. And you experience that you're actually being lived by God. God is living in you, as you, and through you. That's a very, very good path. So now we have dedication, number 7. And we have number 8, which is sneham, or friendship. You might have heard the Christian praise song, I Am a Friend of God. I used to sing it when I was a member of a Christian choir. And that's the idea. You have the relationship of friendship, that God becomes your dearest friend. And you feel a real kinship, a real sense of being related and belonging. And you walk with God. And you talk with God. And you share your life with God. And you have a special chair, perhaps, in your home that's reserved for the Lord. Perhaps when you're sitting in your car, you feel the presence of the Lord sitting with you. Perhaps you set a special place at the dinner table for the Lord. We always did that in my family. My relatives always had a special seat that was for the Lord. And if someone would come to the door during dinner time, we would assume that was the Lord coming for dinner. That's another way of really expecting the presence of God. You know, if you're expecting the presence of God, God is never going to disappoint you. So keep company with God, and that is friendship. And another way of practicing that is to imagine that whoever calls on the phone, whoever knocks on the door, whoever you encounter, that is the form that the beloved is taking. You begin to expect that every encounter is a divine one, which it really is in actuality. But you really make it so when you have that intention as the approach that you're taking with people. And so you share your thoughts. I knew a woman that couldn't meditate. She was a very, very great devotee of Sai Baba. But she would often sit up the whole night and talk to Baba. She would have a picture of Sai Baba on her dressing table. And she'd park her chair there, and she would talk to him all night long. I spent the night in her home, and I heard her. So that's another approach. She was using that 8th approach of sneham, friendship. So invite the Lord to share your life with you and walk with the Lord as your best friend. That's another approach. Number 9 is actually, I believe, the highest. And that's Atma Nivedanam. Atma Nivedanam, which is total surrender. Here you have identified so completely with the divine self, with the Atma, that you have placed yourself fully and completely in that. You have completely given yourself over to the divine spirit, which you no longer see as separate. Some people practice that form of surrender to that form of God that they have chosen, be it Jesus the Christ or Satya Sai Baba or Gurudev or the mystical traveler consciousness. And that's fine as well. You can have God with form or God formless. It's fine. It just depends on what your nature inclines you towards. But when you surrender, and Sai Baba has said, when you surrender to God without a single trace of ego, God will assume the full burden of your welfare. God will arrange everything for you without your thought, without your concern, and without your need to know how. Now, I have lived like that for so long, it's almost like I don't know any other way to live, and I'm not claiming to be perfect in that. But just saying, I have been practicing that for a long, long time, and I can tell you for a fact that everything I need comes to me through grace without my slightest worry or concern about it. It just happens. Why? Because I expect God to be true to his word. You know, my dharma would be at that point to completely surrender. You can't partially surrender. You have to go full bore with this. But if you have the courage to do it, God will never disappoint you. Never. So, this is something that I highly encourage because it takes worry completely out of the equation. You live in such peace when you rely 100% on the Lord to take care of everything. Now, that does not mean that I sit idly like a frog, a frog on a log. I do my duty. I do my dharma. I do what God has given me to do. But I know it's not me doing it. I know that the only one looking through my eyes is the Lord. The only one speaking through the mouth is the Lord. The only one listening through the ears is the Lord. The only one loving and serving is the Lord. Now, in that, you can keep a certain sense of self-identity, let's put it, up to a certain point if you have the dharma of teaching or being in the world. But at the most advanced stage, you will go into a state of complete oneness with God, complete absorption in the divine Holy Spirit. And then there's no more self. There's no more devotee. There is simply the I am that I am. And, of course, that is the completion of your incarnations on this planet. From that state, which is, by the way, given by God, that's not something we can attain by our own efforts at all or by our spiritual practice. But I would say it is the reward of many lifetimes of longing for God, seeking God, doing spiritual practice. And it comes in its own timing. You can't control it. So the greatest thing we can do is aspire to that time when we can completely give our lives over to the Lord and allow him to have his way with us. And the way is Satchitananda, that state of complete existence, ever-expanding awareness, and divine bliss. And that's our great, great, great reward. So I hope this has been helpful to you. Again, we have listening, singing, remembering, serving, reverence, ritual worship, dedication, friendship, and total surrender as the 9 forms of devotion. So let's go out chanting Anai Hugh. Deep breath. And that forms the kirtanam, or the singing to God. You can use the hu, which is very simple to do, or the om. So, I send forth blessings to each one of you, that you may awaken to the bliss that is your immortal self, and know that peace that bypasses all understanding. Peace to all beings and all the worlds, and to each one of you. Adonai.